Vishayendriya samyogat.
Vishayendriya samyogat.
Yattadagre mritopamam.
Yattadagre mritopamam.
Pariname vishamiva.
Pariname vishamiva.
Tatsukham rajasamsmritam.
Tatsukham rajasamsmritam.
Vishayendriya samyogat.
Vishayendriya samyogat.
Yattadagre mritopamam.
Yattadagre mritopamam.
Pariname vishamiva.
Pariname vishamiva.
Tatsukham rajasamsmritam.
Tatsukham rajasamsmritam.
That happiness which is derived from contact of the senses with their objects and which appears like nectar at first but poison at the end is said to be of the nature of passion. Purport. A young man and a young woman meet, and the senses drive the young man to see her, to touch her, and to have sexual intercourse. In the beginning this may be very pleasing to the senses, but at the end or after some time it becomes just like poison. They are separated or there is divorce. There is lamentation, there is sorrow, etc. Such happiness is always in the mode of passion. Happiness derived from a combination of the senses and the sense objects is always a cause of distress and should be avoided by all means. Vishayendriya samyogat yattadagre mritopamam pariname vishamiva tatsukham rajasamsmritam. That happiness which is derived from contact of the senses with their objects and which appears like nectar at first but poison at the end is said to be of the nature of passion. The mode of passion is intimately connected with material desire. In sattva gun, a person is trying to get free from material desire. And in tamagun, it's a state of perpetual deep disappointment in which one just doesn't endeavor, because it's a kind of disappointment that doesn't lead to the striving for self-realization, but simply leads to deeper and deeper frustration. But in the mode of passion, a person is very active with the aim of fulfilling material desires, the most prominent of which we understand from Srimad Bhagavatam is sexual desire. Yan maithunadi grihamedhi sukham. The happiness of materially attached people begins with sexual happiness, but hi tucham. It is certainly insignificant happiness. But it seems to the person in the mode of passion, all kinds of happiness, they seem to be axiomatically desirable, that we have a very strong desire for it, and it just seems right. Why we should build big buildings and have fast motorbikes and have fancy clothes and have lots of money and Sri Aishwarya Prajapsavaha. We should have women, money, dynasty, all these things. And then, of course, we'll be happy. And the whole material world is running on this illusion. The whole material world is running on this illusion. And it's very difficult for people to come out of thinking like that, because it just seems, obviously, if you have nice food, nice clothes, nice house, nice women, then obviously you're going to be happy. That's what people think. Not seeing the evidence all around them that despite having all these things, people are not happy. So it just seems obvious that we work hard, we get money, and then we spend it, and we're happy, and we have a healthy, strong body, and all these things that are required to be happy. But someone who gets out of this mode of passion in which you're just running so fast and I have to do this, I have to do that, I have to get this, I have to get that. Bangalore life, where people work. I saw one advertisement there in Bangalore a few years ago. Billboard. Work hard, play harder. It's an advertisement for some shirt. Party harder. Work hard, party harder. So the idea is that after intense, long hours working, and not just long hours with not working like in a government job, which means you don't do any work, but really intensely working, then at the end of the week, when you should be exhausted, and actually they are exhausted, then take some intoxication and then get jacked up and party harder. This is the mode of passion. And it ends in Pariname Vishameva. It transforms into the distress of, for instance, ending up in a institution for mentally or psychologically damaged people. As that's one of the many good businesses in Bangalore, is running mental institutions for ex-IT professionals. So if someone can just cool down a bit, calm, become calm, and carefully look at everything and see what the situation is, then they think, well, this running around and trying to enjoy the senses, that is not good. Then they come to sattva-gun and sattvam yad brahma-darshanam. By sattva-gun, of course, the characteristics of sattva-guna, they're mentioned in, well, an important one mentioned in Bhagavad Gita is sattvam sanjayate jnanam. From sattva-gun comes knowledge. And over and above that, Bhagavatam states, sattvam yad brahma darshanam. From sattva gun, one can come to the level of self-realization, realization of the Absolute. Okay, you're doing that, but the fly's on this side. He outsmarted you. Now he's gone to this side. Very intelligent fly. That's why you see, it should be from both sides, actually. For the real, in the Raja Darba, there should be from both sides. It's not just for showing respect, but it has a purpose. You need two men to get rid of one fly. Just see. And we think we're in control. Meanwhile, the fly's gone to harass someone else, so he outsmarted you again. Even the fly has intelligence. Okay, well, if you go and sit down, then only the fly will come. So I guess you can go and sit down, and then you can jump up if the fly... There's no fly here, no. Show sattva-gun. One should rise to the platform of sattva-gun. Otherwise, you end up taking birth as a fly. The fly is in the mode of ignorance, but with a good admixture of rajagun, by which he can fly busily here and there and find pieces of stool and then come and go on your food and all this kind of thing. He's active fool. So, In Raja, we say the tamagun is the mode of ignorance, but in rajagun there's no knowledge, actual knowledge. There is sattvam sanjayate jnanam. Sattva-gun leads to knowledge. Now in rajagun there may be knowledge also, just like this modern civilization is developed by science and technology and political schemes and economic schemes and... It's considered that one should be, you need a highly educated population, and that will develop the whole civilization, and then everything would be, we need educated people. Although in Kerala, they're the most educated people in India, and their economy is never very good, despite their communist government, which is supposed to be, well, it's sometimes communist congress, like this. So, there may be knowledge in Rajagun, but it's all ignorance, actually, because it's based on the misconception, the mistake of thinking that sense enjoyment leads to happiness, which seems to be true. Surely, if I get lots of money, I'll be happiness, but actually it's not true, as we see. Okay, please stop this, because it's catching my throat. So, in devotional service, devotional service can be practiced by anyone in any situation, but one has to, devotional service or any kind of activity in this world can be satisfactorily performed, that will give satisfaction to the self, if it is on the platform of sattva gun. In devotional service is activity. Generally we think that sattva gun, that means you withdraw, you sit quietly, do some meditation, don't make any endeavor. But devotional service is activity. Srila Prabhupada stresses this in the Nectar of Instruction. And activity means that you're doing something for the sake of getting some result. Of course, in devotional service, there's regular performance of arati, serving the deity. There's no, what we might say, tangible result that we get from that. But the result is that we want to increase, we want to please Krishna and increase our love for Krishna. We don't, devotional service, deity worship is ideally executed in the mode of goodness and beyond that in pure devotional service. But it can be executed in the mode of passion also, thinking that we're going to worship the deities here better than other places and people will notice. Our deity worship is the best. Or we'll worship the deity nicely and then we'll call people to give a donation. So the mode of passion is always there. Just the other day in Salem Mahatattva, Prabhu was giving class and he said that he just joined the temple and he was asked to cut sabji during the class. And during the class, he was thinking that I'm cutting these potatoes so nicely, surely everyone is noticing me. He remembered after all these years, because it's so absurd. Why should anyone notice how you're cutting potatoes? But he noted that better not have your hand on your mouth. He noted that that he was thinking like that, that egoism came in such a humdrum activity as cutting potatoes. So the mode of passion is always there, especially in the modern age, because we take to devotional service, but we've been raised in a very Rajasic civilization in which the idea is you have to get ahead, you have to make progress, you have to be a success, study hard so you can work hard, so you can get money, and then you can party hard, and then on and on and on. There's no end. There's no end to the passion, and there's no end to the desires. They're always promoting more and more desires, more and more billboards, more and more products that they're producing. Latest iPod or whatever it is, latest. They're all in competition, all the different companies who can bring out the pod or pad or whatever it is that will sell the most. So we're raised in this highly passionate society. And in devotional service also, we're not just worshipping the deity, which is a very, basically it's a very sattvic activity. But we're preaching, we're trying to create things, create a big society of devotees, we're trying to build temples, money is involved. So unless we come to the very pure platform, then we're going to be infected by Rajaguna. It's very easy to get into a kind of mode where we're active in devotional service, but we're not really doing it with the right motives. Or we're so much interested in the result that we become like the foolish person. As mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, what is that? Karta hamiti manyate. Who is that who thinks I am the doer? It is vimudhatma, a big fool, thinks that I'm doing. I've made so many devotees, I've distributed so many books, I did this, I did that. So that is in the mode of passion. And then what happens? Pariname vishamiva. It turns to disappointment. And I've, here in this temple, some time ago, less than a year ago, a couple of devotees approached me and they were in a very disappointed mood, saying that, well, why is our preaching turning to failure? Because they would go and meet big people and had big plans to do this and that, and they were disappointed. Actually, there was no failure, but they had some idea that, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and think that everything's just going to change in a minute or two, that we'll do so much preaching and we'll show everyone. But the actual fact is that it takes time. I mean, by Krishna's grace, there can be a revolution. As Srila Prabhupada made a revolution by bringing Krishna consciousness to the West. But it wasn't just that Prabhupada landed and immediately he landed in Boston Harbor and all the TV channels were there and the President of America was waiting there to garland him. There was no such thing. Prabhupada was alone. Of course, he said, I never felt alone. My spiritual master was always with me. But there is one chapter in the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita called Struggling Alone. And first of all, Srila Prabhupada, he went to stay with some family in a small town in rural America, away from any big city. Then he came to New York, and therefore, he was, no one knew what he was doing, why he was doing, and it took quite some time. And gradually some people started to join him. Then when he went to San Francisco, after some time, then there was a big program arranged and many people started to come. But even those many people who started to come, whereas in New York he'd only had a few coming, but many, they came, but as the New York devotees used to say, there are many coming, but they're not very serious. For instance, the New York devotees were scandalized by hearing that the devotees in San Francisco thought nothing of going outside the temple after the morning program and going to the donut shop. Donuts, it's a kind of cake, you could say. And they thought, well, it's okay, but the New York devotees thought, it's not okay at all. And things gradually developed. It wasn't that Srila Prabhupada just went there and all of a sudden everyone bowed down at his lotus feet. They should have done, but they didn't. So these devotees had become disappointed. They didn't have the patience that comes from the mode of goodness to realize that you have to do, that you may desire to do many things very quickly, but the actual nature of this world is that even materially, even to do anything material, it takes time. Even some of the most famous entrepreneurs of the modern age, Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, it wasn't that they just started off and made their computers and all of a sudden they were rich, but they had to struggle and it was gradual and then it built up. And there are many who try and have good ideas, but it just doesn't work out anyway. There's also, there are many factors. However brilliant ideas you have, or however confident you may be in yourself, there are many factors. It may be that someone has very good ideas, but they just, because the time factor or various factors, it just doesn't work out. So we are not the doer. That's one thing we have to understand. We have to work and understand that we are not the doer. Everything is in Krishna's hands. This idea, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I did this, I did that. That is not a devotional attitude. And ultimately it turns to disappointment. We see that Lord Brahma, he is the greatest brahmana in the whole creation. If one executes the duties of a brahmana perfectly for 100 births, he can take the position of Lord Brahma. But then he's entrusted with creation, which is an activity that involves rajoguna. So he prays that those prayers are there in Srimad Bhagavatam, that I may not be affected by rajoguna. But actually, he does. At least that's how it's described in Bhagavatam. That when the Kumaras refused his order, the four Kumaras refused his order to procreate, he became angry. He tried to suppress it, but he became angry. And that anger became manifested as Rudra. So, how do we get free from Rajagun and come to Sattvagun? Well, Sattvagun is characterized by knowledge. So we should cultivate knowledge, spiritual knowledge. But sometimes we see that devotees, they study, but still they're strongly affected by this Rajaguna. Whereas Arjuna, Krishna taught, this Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaking to Arjuna, Arjuna had to fight, which is a highly, well, at best it's a Rajasic activity. Generally that's considered Rajasic. Kshatriyas, they're considered to be strongly influenced by the mode of passion. The kind of fighting that goes on in the modern age is more in the mode of ignorance, with bombing, terrorist bombings, bombing civilians, no laws, just kill people, that's all, somehow or other. No rules of combat. But Krishna, he's speaking all these things to Arjuna because if someone follows his swadharma, Krishna very strongly emphasizes this as in Bhagavad Gita, then even though the swadharma of a kshatriya is dominated by passion, the swadharma of a vaishya is dominated by passion and ignorance, and the swadharma of a shudra is influenced strongly by ignorance. But if one simply follows his dharma dutifully, then that automatically brings just the resolve to follow one's dharma, that brings one to the platform of sattva, detachment. That I'm doing this, why I'm doing this? Not because I want to get a result, but because it's my duty to do so. So that helps one to come to the position of sattva-gun, detachment, even if someone is by nature in the lower modes of nature. So it's an attitude, one can cultivate sattva-gun with the attitude based on knowledge that I am not the doer, I am not the enjoyer, I am simply here to serve. There is no enjoyment in this world, so why should we try for it? We may not even recognize that in devotional service it is influenced by the modes of nature. But Lord Kapiladev describes this, that there can be devotional service which is influenced by ignorance, by passion, by goodness, but only the devotional service free from the modes of material nature is pure and fully pleasing. So that when, why are we talking about sattva guna? Then why are we not talking about shuddha sattva? Because we are conditioned souls, and we have to cultivate the attitudes that are in sattva guna are conducive to help us rise to the platform beyond all the modes of material nature. For instance, in sattva guna, if we understand I'm not the doer, whereas in rajaguna, we think I am the doer. I am the doer and I will enjoy the result. In sattva guna, one thinks I'm not the doer, but I have to work as I'm obligated. The result is not for me to enjoy. But that is close to the attitude in shuddha sattva, where one thinks that I'm not the doer, I'm simply a servant of Krishna and Hari Guru Vaishnava, I'm their servant, and I have to act not for my own enjoyment, but for their enjoyment. So, Srila Prabhupada, he emphasized that all devotees, they should rise early, follow sadhana, follow all the regulative principles, take prasadam, not non-prasadam, and all this. Because if we all do that, that will purify us. If we don't do, then the effect of the modes of material nature, which is there within our heart, that will again manifest. It's sadhana, means we have to keep on doing it, day after day after day. Nityang Bhagavata Sevaya, daily. We have to keep on with it. Srila Prabhupada, he was very insistent on this. If you read Srila Prabhupada's letters, you'll find that again and again and again, many of his letters he wrote to leaders of the Krishna consciousness movement, and he'd write about some management issues, but many, many, many letters he would say that you have to make sure all the devotees are rising early, chanting 16 rounds, taking only prasadam, going out for preaching and all these things. So, and he also wrote that the leaders, they have to do that by example. They have to set the example. Because yad yad acharati shreshtaha, whatever those who are considered best do, others follow. Whether it's good or whether it's bad. If we have a leader like Yudhishthira or Parikshit, then we would expect that the citizens will be good. You can't guarantee they'll all be good, but if we have a leader like this Italian prime minister just got locked away for 1 year, and what's his name? Bulac, I don't know, I'm not very good at Italian names. And he's open about being highly interested in sex with women and youngsters also. He's not open about the youngsters because that's illegal. So what can you expect with a leader like that? You can't expect people to be good. Or if the leaders in modern age, they're just the political leaders, it's just expected that they have to make arrangements for sense gratification for the citizens. They have to make arrangements so everyone has enough money. And of course, here in Tamil Nadu, one political party gave away free TVs to everyone. Those who don't have TVs, you get a free TV. And of course, they also had their own TV station so that the people could watch entertainment on their station and get the message to vote for them also. So it wasn't exactly altruistically motivated. But that's what people think, that we'll give a free egg for the children, midday meals, one free egg. Well, we'll give two free eggs. someone comes along and says. May happen to the midday meals program also. So why is all vegetarian food? That's sectarian. We need, if we really want to make the children good, we have to give them eggs and meat. That will come. Already some politicians are saying that. So in Krishna consciousness also, the Srila Prabhupada, he was always stressing that leaders have to be ideal, knowing that the followers, they'll follow the good example or the bad example. Now, it's a great responsibility to be a leader in the Krishna consciousness movement, considering that we're all coming from this nasty civilization. And we all have various anarthas. And that if we can't overcome those anarthas and we're a leader, then that will affect how we lead others, and others will pick up those traits. So what was Srila Prabhupada's solution? Well, many times he said, just like George Harrison asked Srila Prabhupada about how the management of the movement will go on when Srila Prabhupada has left. And Prabhupada just stressed the same thing that he always stressed, that the members of the movement, especially the leaders, they have to rise early, follow all the principles, and everything will be all right. Of course, if we say everything will be all right, how can everything be all right? Because in this material world, everything is all wrong. So how can we expect that everything will be all right? Rather, we can expect that within the Krishna conscious movement, there will always be some disturbance and turbulence. It's inevitable. We're attempting to preach Krishna consciousness in a very disturbed age. And the people that are coming to Krishna consciousness and attempting to become preachers, the doctors themselves were just sick just a short time, and still are, still recovering in various stages of recovery, which, if you want to look at it from the other perspective, in various stages of sickness. So disturbance is inevitable, and we shouldn't be discouraged by that, but one of the best ways we can preach is to ourselves become ideal. If we're not ideal, then people won't trust us, and they won't have a good example to follow. Srila Prabhupada, in one purport in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, in his Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita commentary, stated, he was paraphrasing that, what is that? Jagat Tarite Shabe Jane Jane. What is that? You don't know it. It's from that song in praise of the Vaishnavas. Jagata Tarite Shakti Dhare Jane Jane. That every one of the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has the power to deliver the whole universe. So Srila Prabhupada said that we therefore request the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness to all be pure devotees, so that the people of the world may benefit and they may also be pure devotees. So, sometimes in our management, we think we have to make this scheme and that scheme and this management plan and that management plan. And there, in the Kami world, every day practically there's some new book coming about how to do management this way, that way, some other way, this scheme. I remember in the 1980s there was this whole thing about horizontal and vertical management, and as a result of that they set up all these ministries, minister of this, minister of that, minister of everything else. That was supposed to be the horizontal management. The vertical management means top down, and horizontal means it goes on all levels, and it sounds good, but guess what? It's just another idea that someone made up, and that's all. And then there are the 1 minute manager, the 59 second employee, who stole my cheese, in search of excellence, and there are so many, the 7 habits of highly effective people, and on, so many management schemes. But Srila Prabhupada's management scheme was that all the members of the Krishna consciousness movement should rise early and chant Hare Krishna, minimum 16 rounds, offenselessly. He had often emphasized this. And be fully engaged in devotional service. And you may say, well, that's not very practical. Well, that was Srila Prabhupada's standard. And unfortunately, we have seen over the years that many of the leaders, well, maybe not many, but some, they don't follow this, and there may be reasons for that. Health or tiredness or whatever. But at least Srila Prabhupada's standard was that if they can't follow these basic principles for whatever reason they may be, then they shouldn't be a leader. So you have to lead by example. Yad yad acharati shreshtas. If the leaders don't get up, if they don't think it's important to show their face in the temple before 8 o'clock in the morning, then everyone else will have an excuse also. So those who aren't physically fit enough to rise early and do all these things, then how can they be fit to lead a movement? I mean, even the karmis, as Srila Prabhupada noted, they rise early. The people who get things done in the world, they're not sleeping till 11 o'clock. He gave the example, Srila Prabhupada gave the example of Napoleon. He used to sleep on his horse. When he was marching with his troops, he would sleep on his horse. That means as he was marching, he would do like that. So he was, of course, we don't exactly want to be like Napoleon, but Srila Prabhupada gave that as an example of someone who they're fully into it. So they're fully into whatever they're doing. So what is our activity? Spreading Krishna consciousness. We're trying to do that. But what are we asking people to do when we ask them to take up Krishna consciousness? To rise early, chant 16 rounds, study Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, worship the deity. So we have to set the example. Otherwise, if everyone thinks that Krishna consciousness means just to run here and there and build, bring bricks and all these things, then everyone will be doing that and no one will be chanting Hare Krishna. Then what's the point? There are already so many organizations which call themselves spiritual. So, yeah, this, if we have a daily sadhana program, that should help to keep us focused on Krishna. That's the whole point, right? What's the name of this society? International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So, as Srila Prabhupada sometimes used to say, the test of your religion, whether you call yourself Hindu, Muslim, or Christian, are you becoming mad after God? So that is the ultimate. That's what it's all meant for, ultimately. So in the mode of passion, we may do big things suddenly and then become disappointed. But in the mode of goodness, steadily, steadily working, steadily working. Now, there is one gentleman, or some people wouldn't call him a gentleman, who lives on a hill just northwest of here, how far northwest is Bangalore? About 150 kilometers? 200 kilometers, okay. So he's been very successful in many ways in spreading Krishna consciousness. He's very steady in what he's doing, very systematic, planning everything, and everything planned out, and has been successful in getting lots of donations and distributes books and opened many centers. So that might seem, well, that's not in the mode of passion, because it's all very systematic. So we hear many praises of that person who used to call himself a disciple of Jayapataka Swami and now calls himself a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. At one point he decided that he was Prabhupada's disciple and not Jayapataka Maharaj's disciple. He decided. He didn't ask Srila Prabhupada, because Srila Prabhupada already left our manifest vision. So it seems that he's, by systematic planning, steadily working, he's been very successful. So that might appear to be in the mode of goodness. But I would say that's more like the, but if we analyze by Shastric study, that may be similar to the kind of success that other businessmen in Bangalore have. By the good businessmen, they plan, they expand. Because although we do hear praise of this gentleman as being a very dynamic leader and has spread Krishna consciousness systematically in so many ways, we never hear that he's such a nice devotee and everyone loves him, but rather the opposite, that he's controlled by fear, he's very much controlling everything. And even though we don't know exactly what happened, but even though he's done so many things, but we hear also that he's amassed properties worth several thousand crores. So this appears to be very much the mode of passion, where one is controlling, bringing in money. So actually the aim of our Krishna conscious movement is not to control or bring in money. Some control is required in an organization and money is required. But success is not to be judged simply in terms of money, but Srila Prabhupada said, he quoted his own spiritual master, that if at the expense of all my properties and all my mutts, one person could be a pure devotee of Krishna, I would consider my mission successful. And he criticized Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and our own Srila Prabhupada. They criticized these mundane welfare workers who think that they're doing good for others. On the bodily platform. They're on the bodily platform. They're not on the spiritual platform. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that the neophyte devotees ringing the temple bell once is more beneficial to the whole world, both materially and spiritually, than the karmis who opened thousands of schools and hospitals. That's quite a statement, isn't it? It just goes to show that devotional service, even in the neophyte stage, is more valuable than any mundane welfare work that's on the bodily platform. So that is our vision. If we may think that some sadhus are very good and they're very gentle and nicely behaved, and but our vision is that, and they're helping others by having hospitals and schools and all this stuff. But our vision is that if one person goes back to Godhead, that's far more valuable than even the whole world is benefited by, I don't know, sewage systems everywhere. Now in India they want to have sewage systems everywhere. In Vrindavan some years ago they put a sewage system which immediately blocked up, and that's why. Ever wonder why Vrindavan there's always a bad smell of stool everywhere? Because they put a sewage system. And it blocked up, and it's remained blocked up ever since. Whereas previously they had the people, Hari, what do you call that? The Bangi, in Bengali is called Hari. They would come and clean out the stuff that people produce after they've eaten a good meal. And but then they became advanced. and they put in a sewage system. And that's why, according to our olfactory senses, our sense of smell, Vrindavan smells. Actually, the smells there are beautiful smells of the spiritual world, but we don't smell that. Anyway, people may think we're doing good for the world, so even if we make the world perfect and beautiful and everything nice, our vision is, if one person goes back to Godhead, that's more valuable than making the whole world nice, because it isn't nice. It's full of birth, death, old age and disease. However well organized it is, even if you stopped all the crimes against women, they're talking about it. So much talk about crimes against women. Even if we stopped all of that, we wouldn't consider it a major achievement. It's because what we see is that every woman who's ever been in this world has been abused. And every man also, unless they're brought to Krishna consciousness. The whole material world is one of mutual abuse. Everyone is abusing everyone else. So gang rape is particularly horrible form of abuse. But then there's millions of animals being killed every day. Why don't they make a fuss about that? And all of a sudden they got all angry about one gang rape. And there are other gang rapes after that, but they still concentrate on one in particular. They make such a big thing of it. And so we want to see people become pure devotees of Krishna. That's all. Then this, anything else, even sattva gun without Krishna consciousness, it's just another diversion. These so-called welfare workers, nice sadhus, they're very gentle and very well behaved. But what's the use? Shrama eva hi kevalam, without Krishna consciousness, it's all useless. So we see Srila, I was talking about management techniques. We see Srila Prabhupada's management style. What was Srila Prabhupada's management style? Well, Srila Prabhupada was concerned that money is properly spent. He didn't like misspending. He was concerned that everything is properly maintained. But he did take interest in all these things. He would try to get the best. He personally went to Japan to negotiate the printing of his books there. That was the main reason he went there. On one visit, he was very much concerned with all these matters. But sometimes he would get into, have long discussions, getting into the details of accounts and all these different things. So he's very much aware of these things and concerned, but his basic management style was to chant Hare Krishna and to induce others to chant Hare Krishna. And he said that, he wrote a letter to one of his leaders, that if you see that all the devotees are rising early and chanting 60 rounds and following all these things, then management will be at your fingers' ends. In other words, it'll be easy. Because in Krishna consciousness, devotees cooperate and serve because they're satisfied in Krishna consciousness. And if they're not satisfied, that means they're not properly in Krishna consciousness. So, both things. Srila Prabhupada managed by preaching. He was Krishna conscious, he chanted Hare Krishna, and he preached all the time to everyone, whoever was around him. He'd speak about Krishna. Now, there was one manager of a major temple in India. He was the temple president for some time. He managed by not managing. That means he would go on parikrama and take devotees here and there and show them different places. It was a disaster. The whole temple got into tremendous debt and it was not clean. So when we say managed by preaching and being Krishna conscious, that doesn't mean neglect. But Srila Prabhupada showed how to keep Krishna very much in the center by his own Krishna consciousness. So I mentioned some things that we can all learn from. This just came to my mind. Actually, I wasn't going to speak on this. Just in Guru Puja, some thought came to me about this, how this, in the mode of passion is described here. It feels so good. I've got to do it. But in the end, it turns into poison. So sometimes we see like that also. Immature devotees, they think, yeah, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. But they have no experience of the world as it is, that things, just by wishing, things don't happen. You may have, this plan's going to work. I remember once I was on a train from Thailand to Malaysia, and one young English man came up to me and told me, I'm going to write books, and he said the name of some famous author whose name I don't remember. I didn't even know at the time, and he makes millions of pounds by writing these books, but they're not very good books. I can write better books like that. I'm going to make millions of pounds by writing books, he thought. He thought, well, this person can write books, and they're not very good, in his opinion. So I'll write books better than his, and I'll make more money than him. I didn't bother telling him what a fool he was. This young man, and he thinks, yeah, I'm going to do this, and whatever. No experience of life as it is. So, in traditional cultures, young people didn't have as much freedom as they do in the modern age. This whole thing, people have freedom, but people don't know, they don't know how to live or what the purpose. This freedom is just so they can be more easily exploited, actually. In traditional societies, young people, they may be married, but they'd still be under the control of their parents. And you may say, well, they didn't have the freedom, but they were protected also. Once in Australia, I was giving a talk in a university, and I was saying about how women are protected. And one, surprise, surprise, woman asked me after the class, why do women need protection? And I said, from lusty men. Well, it's a fact. We need protection. And we need protection from our own lusty minds. Because, especially in youth, the mode of passion is very strong. That feeling, yeah, I can do so many things. And the sense of sense enjoyment, it feels so strong and powerful. And that's why you put boys and girls together in the college, and they think, oh yeah, great, let's get together. But pariname vishamiva, in the end result, especially for the girl, is like poison, because the boy who she thought loved her dumps her, and she has to get an abortion. So what did she benefit? And he moves on to someone else. That's why women need protection, because they can easily be misled. So in the same way, we may think in devotional service, I'll do this, I'll do that. Why is everything going so slowly? We can do much better. But there have been many people who thought like that. And even those, of course, there may be visionaries who do something like, I mentioned Steve Jobs and Bill Gates. But they also had to work hard, gradually. And apart from them, there have been many, many, many people with ideas. They have inventors' exhibitions, don't they? And so many people invent so many things. But out of those inventors, hardly any invent something which actually makes a significant difference in people's lives. So there are other factors at work also. Srila Prabhupada went to the West. He tried hard. He depended on Krishna. And things developed. So let us endeavor patiently in devotional service. And not be in the mode of passion where it's the shooting star that makes like a firework. It makes a big light in the sky, and in 30 seconds it's finished. Better to be steady in devotional service. Hare Krishna. Any question about this, please? No. All right, you have a question, yeah. Generally, Sattva-gun, it's considered that people are peaceful in Sattva-gun, yes. Not doing much work, well, that's a misunderstanding, thinking that they don't do much work. People in Sattva-gun work, not that they don't work, but they don't unnecessarily, and they don't endeavor for unnecessary things, or they don't work more than they need to. But work has to be there. Everyone has to do some work. But not the idea in the modern age. The idea of work is that you just work until you drop. But that in Sattva-gun, you work. Work is there, but we see that in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Yukta hara viharasya, yukta cheshtasya karmasu, yukta swapna vabodasya yogo bhavati dukaha." That there's one who is regulated in eating, recreation, endeavors, work, and sleeping. Such a person can they can conquer over distress by practicing yoga. So, in other words, there's a time for work, there's a time for sleep, there's a time for relaxation, but in the modern age, it's mostly all work. That's the idea of work. And when we think of work in the modern age, we think of minimum 8 hours a day, and in India more. But in traditional societies, it's not like that. You don't have to work so hard. Work is there, but not excessive. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada worked very hard, yes. But as he said, our work is recreation. What was his work? Chanting Hare Krishna. Yes, he worked hard. He was setting up a movement. But his social plan was that people would live simply and not work excessively and have extra time for chanting Hare Krishna. That was his social plan. But to set that up, he sacrificed by working so hard. But he wasn't, Srila Prabhupada wasn't in the mode of passion. Nor should we be in the mode of passion. And we should follow Srila Prabhupada's example that even though he was working so hard, he was quite content just to sit down and chant Hare Krishna also. In early 1977, when he already had plush apartments in New York, Melbourne, London, France Farm. There's so many rooms, Srila Prabhupada. You can go and visit now, and they're really first class, fit for a king. But Srila Prabhupada was content to sit for, I believe it was 3 weeks in Bhuvaneshwar, in a mud hut. He was quite content to do that, which these demons have broken that now. In the name of widening the road, they broke Srila Prabhupada's heart. But it wasn't that Srila Prabhupada was working hard with the aim of amassing wealth or even followers. Srila Prabhupada was working and he did make many disciples, but he always said that these are devotees sent by Krishna. Srila Prabhupada saw them as his disciples secondarily. Primarily, they are servants of Krishna. That's what he saw. That's why he didn't engage his disciples in certainly in serving him, but not for his sense gratification. But serving him means so they can serve Krishna. Engage them in Krishna's service. People used to criticize that these people, they're all working hard to collect money for some big rich man who's cheating them. But no, Srila Prabhupada used all the money for building temples, printing books. He didn't keep money for sense gratification. He didn't keep money in the bank. Some he kept, but that was for the service of some fixed deposit for the service of the deities in Vrindavan, Mayapur, and Hyderabad. Yeah, anything else? In the early days of the moon, Srila Prabhupada was what? Demanding and pushing devotees. Yeah, he'd say, double it. And actually, Srila Prabhupada engaged the youthful energy of his disciples, who were mostly Americans, Europeans, Australians, who came from a very Rajasic background. So engage their energy in spreading the movement. And we should go on spreading the movement. But that doesn't mean that's Rajoguna. And we should learn from the mistakes of the past also. We've made so many mistakes. We should learn from that. That's Sattva-guna. Everyone makes mistakes, but if we learn from them, we're intelligent. If we don't learn from them, then we're simply foolish. Yeah, who is it? You have a question. What is most important, our own spiritual life or preaching? There is a letter of Srila Prabhupada in which he, throughout the whole letter, he's encouraging preaching. And at the end, he writes that the most important business is to save yourself. That is the highest realization. But the two things are not mutually exclusive. If we try to preach, then we will help others and help ourselves also. And although Srila Prabhupada encouraged so much, he pushed preaching and spreading the movement, but he also insisted that the devotees adhere to standards of Krishna conscious sadhana, without which they wouldn't have the strength to do any to preach anyway. All right? Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.